Well, you know the old saying, things may change, but traditions stay the same. That's always how I felt about college football. Everything in the world may change, but college football stays the same. Not anymore. With all of the changes coming down the pipe, of course, USC and UCLA entering the Big Ten, that's old news. So what's happening next? But more importantly, how does that affect LSU? We'll get into that on today's edition of Locked On LSU.
You are Locked On LSU, your daily podcast on the LSU Tigers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on whatever your preferred podcast platform is, or you can find us on YouTube as well. Locked On LSU. Just search us in the search bar and you can hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a second of your Locked On LSU content. I'm your host, Caroline Fenton, as I am every day. I'm an LSU alum and I now host Sports Talk Radio for ESPN 102.5 The Game in Nashville, Tennessee. But like I mentioned, USC and UCLA entering the Big Ten. That's old news now, even though it came out literally a week ago today. It feels like it is ancient news because there are more things coming out day by day, more changes that are happening day by day that makes news that came out 24, 48 hours ago feel like ancient history. So Texas and Oklahoma entered the SEC. I admittedly didn't think that it was going to cause a domino effect that it did, but clearly here we are. Texas and Oklahoma entered the SEC and college football was changed forever because USC and UCLA entered the Big Ten. And now it's all about which team and which conference can make the most money, which conference is going to be the most valuable or attractive property for a cable news network. For example, the SEC signed a $3 billion deal with Disney, who owns ESPN. I don't know if that deal happens if the promise of Texas and Oklahoma wasn't there. So what happens next? Because we saw the domino effect of Texas and Oklahoma entering the SEC, which was USC and UCLA entering the Big Ten. And that was a much, much larger move, in my opinion. I know it feels the same on paper, but what it represents is so much larger than Texas and Oklahoma entering the SEC, because I don't remember thinking, okay, well, this is the end of college football as we know it, whenever Texas and Oklahoma entered the SEC, but I did think that when USC and UCLA entered the Big Ten. So I think that there are three pretty instant repercussions in terms of this move for the Pac-12, for the Big 12, and for the ACC. What's next for those three conferences whose futures are admittedly pretty up in the air? So first and foremost, what is next for the ACC? Well, the ACC and the Pac-12 have been discussing a broadcasting partnership with ESPN. So it would bring the ACC and the Pac-12 together for a quote-unquote mutually beneficial relationship. So it would heavily involve the ACC network because the key here is all about the grant of rights. So why are Texas and Oklahoma not entering the SEC until 2025? Well, it's because Texas and Oklahoma have a deal with the Big 12, a television deal with the Big 12. It's the same thing with the ACC, is that they have a grant of rights with ESPN and the ACC network through 2036. So to put this into perspective, I don't know what the buyout would be. And honestly, I really don't know what that grant of rights looks like. I mean, they're going to have to go to court at some point if the ACC does want to break away, or if there are individual members of the ACC that want to break away from the ACC, they're going to have to, you know, go to court, pay a hefty fine. I don't know exactly what that looks like. I'm not a lawyer, but it's going to be an incredibly difficult process. I do know that for certain. So just to put the ACC situation into perspective with ESPN, with the contract that isn't up for another 14 years, Texas and Oklahoma would have had to pay $80 million each to the Big 12 to leave early. I believe to go to the SEC in this upcoming season in 2022. So that's just 3 years. So the ACC is looking at 14 years and also a lot of legal issues. So the ACC is pretty stuck. So this would be the ACC's way of being able to stick to its grant of rights with ESPN and not have to pay that that massive buyout. And the ACC is also able, in bringing in the Pac-12 into this agreement, it would give the ACC additional revenue from its television contracts. The Pac-12 would be able to stay intact with its 10 members, you know, getting to cash in on that deal. And also ESPN wins in all of this as well, because this, I can't reiterate this enough. It's all about the television networks. It's all about their money. And it's all about how valuable the television markets are for ESPN, for Fox, for CBS, so on and so forth. So ESPN would be able to get a piece of the Pac-12, and therefore would replace the failing Pac-12 network, and ESPN would be able to cash in on the West Coast. So it works out for all members, you know, on paper, at least it works out for all members. And one important thing to note here is that this agreement, one, there is no pen to paper. There is no legal agreement yet. This is just a discussion. And also, it would not merge the two conferences together. You know, you could see, you know, for example, West Virginia play Colorado. You know, you could see some Pac-12 ACC crossover games. However, they would each be their own individual conferences. There would still be a Pac-12 championship. There would still be an ACC championship. And the teams in each respective conferences would compete for those championships. However, you could see a little bit of crossover there. But at its core, it's a media agreement that would replace the Pac-12 network and would allow ESPN to cash in on the Pac-12. So that's kind of what the ACC is looking at. However, there could be a massive hitch in that plan, and that comes with the future of the Big 12. If the Big 12 gets what it wants, then the ACC and the Pac-12 will not have this agreement, because the Pac-12 essentially will not exist anymore, because it was reported this week that Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, and Colorado are having conversations with the Big 12. I've also heard Oregon and Washington thrown into that conversation as well. So you're looking at four potentially, or maybe even six of the remaining 10 members of the Pac-12 that are in discussions of the Big 12 to potentially move. So I think it's interesting also that Colorado is involved in this discussion, because Colorado is a founding member of the Big 12. So basically be undoing what they did whenever they joined the Pac-12. But an interesting just little nugget about this is the athletic director in Colorado at the time, who moved Colorado from the Big 12 to the Pac-12, is Mike Bone. And that name might mean nothing to you, but it's funny because he's the current athletic director at USC. And is the person who moved USC from the Pac-12 to the Big 10. So he sure has a funny little habit of doing that, doesn't he? He has a funny little habit of moving conferences, but I digress. So that would basically make the Pac-12 non-existent if four to six of their existing 10 members are in the Big 12, and then those remaining six to four members who aren't included on the Big 12 deal, I don't know what happens to them. And that's, I think, a question that we're all asking ourselves, and especially members of those schools, like a Washington State, for example. Washington State has not been discussed in a movement to the Big 10, to the Big 12. The only way that those schools could survive in the currently existing Pac-12 is this agreement with the ACC. Maybe even not, because I'm sure that there are several ACC schools who are just itching to get out of the ACC and to find a little bit more safe and a lot more permanent solution. I can see, you know, Clemson or Florida State or Miami or UNC kind of looking for the next move, because not only are those, you know, big time powerhouse football programs that probably want to be in a more competitive conference, those are also very desirable markets for the SEC and for the Big Ten. I look at Virginia and UNC most notably, for the SEC at least, because that's the North Carolina and the Virginia market that the SEC would be able to capitalize on that they don't currently have. I've seen Clemson's, you know, name thrown around most and joining the SEC, but if I'm the SEC, if I'm Greg Sankey and I'm making all of my moves motivated by money, which they are, I don't look at Clemson as being an absolute must-have, because The SEC already has a South Carolina market. So you kind of have to think, you have to take your football brain, your football hat off for a little bit and put your business media person hat on and think about television markets and money, because that's what all of these moves are motivated by. And the ACC, you know, their grant of rights again until 2036. I don't honestly know how they get out of that. But for the Pac-12, the ACC, and the Big 12, there are several things that are up in the air. The futures are up in the air, and it all depends on the television contracts and what those teams in the Pac-12 do decide to do, because they have not re-signed their television agreements yet. So I believe in the next year or two, those Pac-12 schools, if they did decide to merge with the Big 12, that they would ultimately decide to make that move in the next couple of years. Another difficult part about that, though, is that the Big 12, I don't see a scenario, even with Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Arizona State, so on and so forth, I don't see a scenario in which the Big 12 is competitive enough to get a seat at this table. The Big 12 just lost a massive portion, a massive fraction of their income in Texas and Oklahoma. Income, I don't think is the right, revenue is the right word to use, excuse me, of their revenue losing Texas and Oklahoma and bringing in BYU, UCF, and Cincinnati, the teams from the AAC that they announced would join the Big 12 this past year. Those teams don't make up the revenue that you lost from Texas and Oklahoma. You know, bringing in Oregon and Washington or Arizona and Arizona State, whatever teams it might be, yeah, those are some bigger name programs, but also it doesn't bridge that gap of revenue. And now you're just adding more schools that you have to split your revenue with. So it's a very, very tricky situation. But if I'm those schools in the Pac-12, I'm not getting into bed with the Big 12. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. I don't think, I mean, I look at teams like Colorado, you know, I think that would be a better fit. But if I'm Oregon or Washington, ain't no way am I making that move to the Big 12. But I'm talking a lot about teams that you don't care about and honestly conferences that you don't care about. So why does this matter with LSU? Where does LSU come into the equation? I want to get into that coming up next. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. So there are so many different kinds of makes and models of cars, and then you add in electronic vehicles. It's almost impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all of the parts that you need. So don't worry about going into the store and having to endure all kinds of intimidating questioning when you have access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. So you can save time and money when using Rock Auto, because at some chain auto parts stores or dealerships, they'll upcharge 30%, 50%, even 100% for the exact same parts that they have at rockauto.com. So for example, a Honda Odyssey fuel pump is $353 from your average chain auto parts store, and it's only $216 from Rock Auto. So you're saving big time cash with Rock Auto. Plus, it's a family business, and they've been serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. So you're reliable, and they're reliably low prices for every single customer. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. All you got to do is just write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get your podcasts, breaking down the future of college football and the crossroads that the Big 12, the ACC, and the Pac-12 are facing now that, you know, those conferences are incredibly vulnerable. But what about the SEC and also the Big Ten too, because they're a part of this equation, but I want to focus in on the SEC. What does their future look like? There have been so many discussions about, you know, what comes next and what is the next domino to fall, because they're going to continue to be dominoes, massive dominoes that fall. I noticed, or I mentioned, excuse me, Virginia and UNC possibly moving to the SEC. That's a massive, massive move. But I think the big conversation, and honestly, a very widely agreed upon opinion, is the fact that as soon as 5 to 10 years, college football could resemble the NFL, and that the Big Ten is the AFC, the SEC is the NFC, and you have two mega conferences. And I don't think that we're far away from that. But this was Brett McMurphy on the Paul Feinbaum show earlier this week talking about conference realignment and what that would look like for the SEC and the Big Ten?
It's certainly, not that there was any doubt, Paul, but now it's so obvious. There's a Big Two and everybody else. Forget the Power Five. It's the Big Two and everybody else. And now everybody's scrambling to get in that Big Two. And multiple sources I talked to yesterday said, look, the Big Ten's not going to stop at 16. And other people I talked to said, if you think the SEC is just going to stand pat while the Big Ten makes all these moves, you're sadly mistaken.
Yeah, again, that was Brett McMurphy on the Paul Feinbaum show. And I think it's a really interesting thing to think about is what is the future of the SEC and the Big Ten? Because it seems as if it's going to be, as he said, the Big Two. It's not the Power Five. It's not a Power Four. It is a Power Two. And the SEC and the Big Ten are only going to get stronger. How does that affect LSU? Two very good ways. And there's also, depending on how you look at it, a good thing and a bad thing about this whole situation as far as LSU is concerned. And I want to get into that coming up next. But first of all, I want to focus on the two good things that LSU, the two good situations that LSU is in right now. The good is that LSU is as safe can be. So my co-host on my radio show in Nashville, he went to Louisville. He's a very, very proud Louisville alum. And we were talking about all of this movement, and he said so many times he just couldn't harp on enough how much he hated this. And I was like, what? Like, what do you hate so much about it? I understand the changing landscape of college football, and I understand why, you know, you might not be approaching change with something that is so traditional, you know, in the most positive way, but what about it exactly do you hate so much? And he was like, honestly, I think that I'm just being a Louisville homer and that I don't think that Louisville is going to be safe. And I don't think that Louisville is going to be part of the equation if two super conferences do emerge in that NFC, AFC style of college football. And I sat back and I thought, I think that I'm not feeling that same way that you do because I know that my school is safe. There is no scenario where college football could expand to one mega conference, two super conferences with 24 teams each. There's no scenario in which maybe those super conferences or one mega conference breaks away from the NCAA and they compete for a different trophy in which LSU is not involved. LSU will be involved in the most powerful tier of college football. No matter what happens, LSU is going to be included. That is the privilege of being such a powerhouse and respected program. And it's the same thing as in Alabama or in Ohio State or Michigan. Those schools aren't getting left out. And LSU is going to be included in whatever plan happens. So that is the good thing is, you know, a lot of schools, I think like Washington State, like Louisville, like I mentioned, some schools like West Virginia, they're probably shaking in their boots a little bit because they don't know where their future lies. They might not be in the super conference, the mega conference, and then those schools lose out on a lot of money because they are not getting the same television deals as the Texases, the Oklahomas, the Ohio States, the LSUs, the Alabamas. Their TV deals and their TV revenue goes down, which would then affect the rest of their athletic programs. I'll just use LSU for an example. LSU football in its revenue funds track and fields, it funds swimming and diving, it funds women's volleyball. Those programs don't exist without the just insane amount of revenue that LSU football brings in. For a school like West Virginia, who wouldn't be getting the same share of the pie that they're currently getting in the Big 12, you would probably say goodbye to men's tennis and cross country and the smaller programs because they just can't afford them anymore. So on a macro level, LSU is as safe can be. The second reason why I think this is really good for LSU is because it almost seems inevitable now with the expansion of conferences that the college football playoff will also expand to either 12 teams, which was proposed last year and it got shot down. And I believe the college football playoff currently exists through 2026. So until then, it'll be four. But after that, it seems almost inevitable that it'll expand to either 12 or 16 teams. I just don't see any way that there can be a 16-team SEC as currently constructed, because I'm sure it'll expand even more in the next 4 years, or a 16-team Big Ten where those conferences aren't pushing for an expanded playoff. Or even you could look at the smaller programs who say, okay, well, the SEC and the Big Ten are getting all of this money from the TV revenue. We at least want our best shot at a seat at the table. And that's exactly why I think it's good for LSU, because this means college football playoff expansion. Whether it's 12 teams or 16 teams, this gives LSU the ability, or a better ability, to compete for the national championship. Because right now, as currently constructed, I mean, the SEC West is the most difficult division in college football, and it's not even close. So, I mean, LSU loses one game. Let's say they lose one game to Alabama. Well, that's already, they're missing out on their shot at the college football playoff because they lose to Alabama. Let's say Alabama has an undefeated season. Alabama goes to the SEC championship, and it would be incredibly difficult to campaign for LSU to get a spot at the table of the college football playoff when they don't compete for an SEC title, even if they only have one loss on their schedule. Maybe so, but it would be a long shot. I mean, you lose two games and forget about it. Let's say LSU plays, you know, Georgia and Alabama in a single year, as they did in 2018. Well, you know, if they lose to both of those teams, you know, bye-bye college football playoff. An expanded playoff gives LSU, or at least gives everyone, expands the seats at the table. And it would be more likely that LSU would get that seat competing in such a difficult conference, having that strength of schedule, and also almost, you know, every year looking at the schedule and looking at a couple of games already as losses, which is just an unfortunate reality of where it stands in the SEC West and really as college football as a whole. But that gives LSU an ability, a better ability, to be able to compete for a national title. So not just being safe in whatever happens to college football and knowing that LSU is going to get, you know, the best end of the bargain of any team in college football, and also a better opportunity at the college football playoff. Those are the two good things about it. But coming up next, I want to get into one aspect of all of this that I think could be good or it could be bad, depending on your personal preferences or how you view it. I'll break that down coming up next. So the people who brought you healthy and tasty comes the latest gift to your taste buds. And you've probably tried the amazing coconut brownie chunk Built Bar. But guess what? They've got a coconut brownie chunk puffs treatment. That's right. Your favorite flavor, the coconut brownie chunk Built Bar flavor that you love, in a delicious, chewy, super light, covered in 100% real chocolate, fluffy marshmallow that's infused with protein. So stop drooling about it and listen to me, because they're good for you. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and you don't have to sacrifice any of the deliciousness for it. The coconut brownie chunk puffs are only here for a limited time, so go now to built.com to make sure that you don't miss out, because I know you are not going to want to miss out on this. They're going fast because they taste amazing and they're good for you. They've got collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently, and they've got tons of health benefits. You can eat something that tastes good and it's good for you. That protein is good for your hair, your skin, your nails, and it'll keep you full all day long. Plus, the best part about Built Puffs is that they taste amazing, but you can enjoy them guilt-free, because they're really good for you. They're the perfect treat. I have a sweet tooth, and I know that I want to stick to eating right, and Built Bars and Built Puffs are the perfect option for me. When you've got a craving and you need to satisfy your sweet tooth like I need to satisfy mine, but you want a quick and healthy snack, they're an excellent source of protein. There's delicious coconut, rich, sweet brownie, creamy marshmallow. Stop fantasizing and get to Built.com to order your box of coconut brownie chunk Built Puffs right now. Go to Built.com, use promo code LOCKED15, that's one word, LOCKED15, and get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCKED15. So there's so much changing about college football. Admittedly, I don't like it. I don't like change. And I don't like it because I view college football as a regional. I consume college football regionally. I am a regional fan of college football. I like the SEC. I love my team. I love LSU. I also love SEC football, and I will watch an SEC game over any other conference any day of the week, even if it's, you know, a not great SEC matchup. I'm still going to watch it. Of course, I'll watch a Michigan, Ohio State, and of course, I'll watch a Bedlam, or of course, I'll watch a, you know, USC, Arizona State game, you know, those kinds of games. But 9 times out of 10, I'm watching an SEC game because that's the conference that my school plays in, and that's the conference that I love. I love the culture of the SEC. I love the feeling of Southern football, just the fact that, you know, the tailgating and the camaraderie, the culture overall of Southeastern Conference is what I love so much. So that's why I don't like this move. And this was Kirk Herbstreit on SportsCenter a year ago, kind of predicting that this will happen and kind of how he feels about the changing of college football.
That's what my concern is not knowing what this will lead to. And again, I just hate losing the tradition of this sport. Mm-hmm. I've always been, I guess, naive to it. I've always tried to be the guy that's like, no, we're going to hold on to our traditions. People care about those traditions. They care about the rivalries. Clearly, the decision makers don't. And we're now in an arms race, and it's about the money.
Honestly, and I went digging for, you know, all kinds of clips to hear what some of the national talking heads were talking about. And I was honestly shocked to hear that from Kirk Herbstreit. I'm sure I heard that around this time last year whenever Texas and Oklahoma joined the SEC. But hearing it again, knowing what we know now, it was almost wild to hear Kirk Herbstreit admit that it's all about the money. Because these are moves that are motivated by the networks. These are not moves, I mean, for the most part, it's motivated by the networks. Of course, the conferences and the schools are on board as well because they're getting that money from the networks. But this is all a money grab for the network. So I was kind of surprised to hear Kirk Herbstreit almost admit that ESPN is money grabbing in all of these moves, you know, the network that employs him. So I was kind of surprised to hear that, but I do agree with him that it feels like this is the hyper commercialization of college football. And it's almost diluting the culture, it's diluting the tradition, it's diluting the rivalries, because now, you know, we don't care, or ESPN or Fox or whoever it might be, does not give two cares that USC and Ohio State aren't rivals or don't have a storied rivalry and that their matchup doesn't have a name or a trophy. They don't care. They do not care at all that UCLA and Rutgers are going to play, or, you know, they're gonna have to fly from LA to Bloomington, Indiana every year. They don't care because they make more money off of it. So that I don't like that, you know, you're not going to have UCLA Cal every year because that's a storied rivalry, but the networks don't care that those aren't rivalries. And that's what I think is a bad thing in this whole situation, even though in the long run, maybe it could benefit LSU. Maybe this does give them a better shot at competing for a national title. Maybe, you know, even though LSU is safe in all of this, it doesn't mean that I like it. But that's because I view college football regionally, because I like the SEC, because I like the rivalries that exist, and because I love the tradition of college football. Not necessarily, you know, and I look at the NFL, for example. I feel like a lot of people, myself included, prefer the college football over the NFL because of how quirky and different it is. Whereas in the NFL, you play another team just because that's what's on your schedule. In college football, you play another team because that's who you play every year. And because LSU plays Alabama because that has happened forever. So that's changing. But if you prefer to watch football, college football, if you're an NFL fan, you like the nationality of it. You like the fact the Los Angeles Chargers are going to play the New York Jets. You like the fact that the Carolina Panthers are going to play the Cleveland Browns, even though regionally that doesn't make any sense. It's because it's a really good product, because it's two good teams. And I guess, you know, Cleveland Browns and Carolina Panthers. That's funny that I actually just said that without even thinking about it, because, you know, with the Baker move, but whatever, I digress. They're not really two good teams, but whatever. You like the product on the field, no matter where they're from, no matter where those teams play. If you consume it on a national perspective, if you want to watch, you know, Michigan, Alabama every year, you probably love this move. If you want to watch Texas A&M, UCLA every year, you're going to love this move. And that's a good thing for the nationalization of college football. But I know myself, and I think a lot of SEC fans feel the same way, that it's the regionality of college football that makes it so special, that makes it so different, that makes it, with zero pun intended, makes it just mean a little bit more. So that's kind of, depending on how you look at it, the good and the bad thing about this is that college football is losing a lot of its tradition, a lot of its rivalries, and it's losing what made it so individualistic and what made it different from the NFL. And that's because it wasn't all about money. It was about what we've always done. It was about, you know, the third Saturday in October, Alabama and Tennessee play. And it's about the first Saturday in November, Alabama and LSU play. It's all about that. And while we may still have that, we might not. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just different. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. So coming up tomorrow on the podcast, I'm going to break down what Miles Brennan had to say at Manning Passing Academy last week and how that quarterback position and how that quarterback room and how many question marks are surrounding it also is affecting the national perspective of other position groups as well. I'll break that down on tomorrow's podcast. But make sure that you make your second listen today, Locked On SEC. Every day, host Chris Gordy and the local experts of Locked On take you across the SEC in 30 minutes.